Wake up, Denver. You're listening to Bo Mitchell and Bob Belton. This is You Get the Blessing, and that's REM. It's the end of the world as we know it.
And we have a reason for listening to that song.
Absolutely.
In 1980, whatever, when Bob and I met and became friends, he was already a genius, and I was a budding genius that he forced to go to seminary. And Belts has now written 15 books, I believe, and I've now read 3 books. But Bob wrote his first book.
Yeah, very first.
It was called How to Survive the End of the World, and it was very exciting for all of us to see our friend step out in faith and courage and write this book about the book of Revelation, the book in the Bible that really describes what the end of the world is going to look like. And the cover of this book that Bob and I published back in 82 or 3 or
early 80, 81, somewhere in there now. 82, actually.
So the cover was a Superman cape, at least the big S, kind of like, here's how you survive the end of the world. And it was a what would you call it?
Commentary, really, kind of a everyman's commentary on the book of Revelation.
Commentary for a guy like me thinking, all right, here's what you need to do to survive the end of the world. Interesting question, a question that's been asked throughout the ages, is still being asked today. And I want to spend time today on You Get the Blessing, just interviewing Bob about this topic, because he has just started a new series at Highline Community Church on the book of Revelation, and it's so exciting. If you know what we're talking about and want to know more about it, you will leave this series knowing all you need to know about what the book means, how it's written, what it says, what's literal, what's symbolic, which is most of it, I believe. But scary if you're just clueless about it, but really not scary if you'll come and listen. So Highline meets 3651 South Colorado Boulevard in the Summit Room there, just one block off of Hamden in Colorado. Bob's teaching it. We invite you to come. Listen today to our tips from the team session we're doing now as we discuss just a highlight reel of what goes on in this book. So start with the setting of the whole book, Bob, and why it's so critical to us to study it and learn it.
Well, Bo, as you said, it's the last book in the Bible, so all you have to do is turn to the end and you run into it. And it is a book, I think, that a lot of people avoid because it is complicated when you read it without any sense of what was going on. It's actually a unique kind of literary form that was commonplace at the end of the first century when John was writing it, but is very foreign to us today. It's highly symbolic. It actually has almost what you could think of as a code, but if you don't know the code, the book makes no sense. And then kind of on the flip side of that, it's the only book in the New Testament that actually promises a blessing if you read it. So it's not something that was intended to be so obscure that no one would take the time to read it. It played a very important role in the early church. And again, it's kind of fun to dig into this thing and help people understand it. Context, real quick, is that it's written by John the Apostle, the same John that wrote the Gospel of John, wrote 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, all in the New Testament. And it's written at the end of the first century when all of the other disciples that were with Jesus during his time on earth have actually all died, most of them martyrs' deaths for their faith in Christ. John's the only one left. He's quite an elderly man at this point in time, and he's been sent from Ephesus, where he is sort of the spiritual leader of the whole area of the empire, Roman Empire, called Asia Minor, which today is occupied by Turkey. And And he has been sent to a little island off the coast of Ephesus there called Patmos, which was a Roman penal colony where the Romans sent political prisoners. We think there was a marble mine there, and those prisoners were forced to work in this mine on the island of Patmos. The reason John has been sent is that in 95 AD, when we think this actually took place, the Roman emperor was a guy by the name of Domitian. And in the Roman Empire, periodically, an emperor would come along who would take seriously the fact that in the Roman world, the emperor was viewed as a deity. And most of the Roman emperors, well, actually, about 50%, it's interesting to see how it went back and forth, but they took the fact seriously. They thought they were a god, and Domitian was demanding that everyone in the empire publicly would burn incense to him as an act of worship and would confess that Domitian is Lord and God. And of course, the Christians, they couldn't do that because, you know, there was only one Lord, and that was Jesus. And oftentimes when they were asked to confess Caesar as Lord, they would say that Jesus is Lord, there is no other. And John, in resisting, denying Christ, worshiping Caesar, became an enemy of the state and got sent to Patmos. Horrible times for those who are following Christ, times of great suffering, great persecution, probably great discouragement, wondering where in the world is, you know, Jesus in the midst of all of this, because he had promised he was returning. It's part of the Gospels, as you know. And in what I think was probably John's darkest hour, he's there on the island, and Jesus Christ, risen and exalted, by the way, glorified, different than he was when he was simply walking the rugged roads of Galilee, actually comes and visits John and gives him this futuristic, symbolic vision of where the world is heading and what ultimately is going to take place when Christ comes again.
So, as you said, it's scary to some people. It's somewhat confusing as to how am I supposed to take this and understand the symbolism. What do you think was John's response while it was happening? Do you think he got it? Or do you think he was just taking dictation and thinking, man, this sounds crazy?
Well, it's real interesting. Again, if you think of the fact that, and the text itself specifically states that that God made it known, and the word that appears there in the original text means to signify or to communicate using signs and symbols. And it was part of a literary genre called apocalyptic literature. Sometimes, by the way, the actual title of the book is The Apocalypse, and coming from the very first word in the book in the original language, which is apocalypsis, which means an unveiling, a making known the unknown, to reveal or uncover, and we get our word then revelation from that word. And but John would have been familiar with that. The other thing is that the signs and symbols in the book of Revelation, probably 90%, someone has said of the 404 verses in the book that 300 of them have some connection to the Old Testament. So in a sense, the code to understanding the book is found in the Old Testament, and for first century Christians, they would have really known the Old Testament well, and much of what John saw, he would have known what that imagery represented. But we don't, because for one thing, most people today, you know, really aren't familiar with the Old Testament, and secondly, you know, they don't know whether are these literal things we're reading about here, and or if it is symbolic, what does the simple symbol represent?
So what? How can you give us a overview here in 15 minutes for our listeners today that might encourage them to come and jump in on the series that you're teaching in Highline? Can you give a snapshot of what the book's about?
Yeah. So starts out John on the island of Patmos reporting that he's had this vision. And when he turns around, he hears a voice saying, write what you see and send it to the churches. And then he names seven specific first century churches all there around the area of Ephesus. And when John turns to see where the voice came from, he sees Jesus. But again, he sees Jesus in a glorified form, not like, again, in his earthly ministry. And I like to think of this as Jesus as he is, you know, that Christ is no longer limited and his glory is no longer veiled like it was. But he himself said that, you know, that he was going to return to the Father and would be glorified with the glory he had from all eternity. So it begins with a vision of Jesus. And really, the big thing about Revelation, by the way, is the main subject of the entire thing is Jesus. There's four different times where Jesus appears in some kind of a symbolic form in the book, and the primary message of the book is that he's coming again. And so chapter 19 of Revelation is where it's actually recorded the actual second coming of Christ, and then the following chapters, really, what is the future of the universe, in a sense, after Christ comes again. So here's how it goes. Chapter 1, vision of Christ. He tells John to write to seven churches. Chapters 2 and 3 contain seven letters to seven first century churches that are not symbolic. There's little pieces of it, but really have very solid spiritual messages to the churches, like be faithful, avoid compromise. I'm with you in the midst of suffering, and they're very practical. In some ways, those two chapters are the easiest to understand and the most relevant to us. But then in chapter 4, John has an experience where he says he's caught up in the Spirit, and he's actually enters into the very place that we would call heaven, the very presence of God, and has a vision there in chapters 4 and 5 that have to do with the future of planet Earth and of humanity. And beginning then in chapter 6, 6 through the end of the book, are this vision of the future of what's going to happen.
So this is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. Today we're taking a little journey into what we call tips from the team. Our norm is to interview a guest. Today, we don't have a guest. Our guest is my co-host, Bob Belts, who has written a book called How to Survive the End of the World, a commentary on the book of Revelation, and is presently teaching this series at Highline Community Church. We encourage you to go face-to-face, hear Bob, Sunday mornings, 10:15, 3651 South Colorado Boulevard, just one block south on Colorado Boulevard off the corner of Hamden, Colorado. It's the church that kind of sits back from Plymouth and First Nazarene there, so don't get mixed up. And when you go in the building, you're looking for the summit room to the right. It's where Highline's holding services now, and Bob's teaching this series. Today's snapshot of the book of Revelation, we hope, is an encouragement to you, a challenge to not shy away from learning what this book has to say, and Bob was just giving us pieces of the overview. So keep going, Bob.
Well, I think one thing that probably a lot of people are interested in is where are we kind of on the timeline of events? And, you know, many people, myself included, believe that we are in what the Bible refers to as the end times, and that the events that are portrayed in the book of Revelation, I believe, are, you know, we're right in the midst of some of them. So it's a very relevant book, and I recognize that, you know, really through the last 2,000 years, Christians have always kind of looked at this book and tried to figure out where am I, and there have been other times when people have felt like, you know, this must be it, but never has there been a time in human history where so many of the prophetic pieces in the Bible and in the book of Revelation actually are in place and surround us. So I think it's extremely relevant to, you know, to our time. You know, one of the big pieces, for instance, that in the book of Revelation, just to kind of show you how current world history ties into Revelation, is that up until 1948, many scholars didn't know what to make of the fact that so much of the book revolved around the nation of Israel, and even the temple at certain points in time in the book. And, you know, from 70 AD, prior to when John writes the book, in 70 AD, the Romans destroyed the city of Jerusalem, destroyed the temple in Israel. And from 1970 till 1948, there was not a nation of Israel. 1948, which for many of us is, you know, kind of around the time some of us were born. Others probably listening, you know, or if you're a little older, this has still been part of your lifetime.
And the last year, the Cleveland Indians won the World Series, I might
exactly,
add.
Which a lot of people put together with the formation of the nation of Israel as showing it must be the end times.
Wow, that's a long dry spell. My dad hit 336 that year.
Oh, brother.
1948. Okay.
So 1948 almost in some ways was like a, it's like someone pushed a stopwatch for the final countdown. Israel becomes a nation again, and suddenly you begin really looking at what's taking place around the world that would tend to fit in with the scenario that the Bible paints and that Revelation talks about. One of the big things that Revelation talks about, and again, is this whole period of time prior to the coming and return of Christ that is referred to as the tribulation. And the tribulation, and without going into more detail than probably our listeners would be interested in, is the last 7 years of human history the Bible refers to prior to the return of Christ is going to be a time of great upheaval around the world, both in terms of wars taking place, in terms of natural disasters, in terms of, you know, supernatural kind of things happening, both in terms of released demonic kinds of activity, as well as powerful spiritual Jesus kinds of activity going on. And at a point in time, first of all, 1948, some people kind of was a trigger, not for the 7 years, but actually for what the Bible refers to as the final generation, when Jesus makes an allusion back in the Gospel of Matthew, when he's talking about his second coming and some of the signs that will surround it. There's a way of understanding part of what he says as that the generation that sees Israel become a nation will not pass away until everything is completed. Well, we're the generation. You know, some people have thought back when this happened, some people said, well, a biblical generation is 40 years. Jesus is coming in 1988. Of course, 1988 came and went. Jesus didn't come. But the idea can more be that people that were born at that point in time, that generation will not completely die off before all of the end times events take place. So that's one reason why many biblical scholars are, you know, keeping their eyes on events going on around the world that might tie into this end time scenario.
And what's your personal gut on that?
Here's what I think. Number one, it's possible that Jesus Christ could literally return today. Everything that has to take place has actually been set in place where that we could have what would be referred to as the imminent return of Christ. Now, I think that that is possible. I don't think it's quite probable, simply because I think there are some things that haven't become clear yet. Things like the rise of a 10-nation confederacy, that roots in the old Roman Empire. People used to look at the European common market, the European, you know, Union, as perhaps somehow fulfillment of that. But that out of that end times, power that arises, that there is going to be an individual that the Bible calls the Antichrist. And, you know, even though there are many people today that think maybe President Obama is the Antichrist, I can promise you there were people that thought Ronald Reagan was the Antichrist. There were people that thought Bill Clinton was the Antichrist. You know, I mean, there's a lot of theories, but I don't see anyone in the world today yet emerging into that kind of a role of prominence. So my hunch is, could Christ return today? Possibly. Will Christ return in our lifetime? I think probably. So I would move from possible to probable. Will Christ return someday? Absolutely. So, I'm sort of in the midst there and watching. I watch what goes on in the Middle East when Iran, which is a nation that is beyond the Euphrates, which is exactly the terminology that's used in the scripture, talks about annihilating and pushing Israel back into the ocean. And the biblical prophecy says that at the end times, prior to Christ coming, that Israel is going to be attacked both by the nation beyond the Euphrates and by a coalition of nations that the Bible specifically mentions, which are all hostile Muslim Arab states today that are aligned against Israel. You know, you watch these things and wonder kind of what is there things going on in the news today that actually are fulfilling biblical prophecy as they happen.
So concern about ourselves, and are we in and have made choices to put us in and on the right side of this if and when it happens, still are a major concern. But learning about this stuff might encourage some people who are sitting on the fence to think, well, wait a minute, if this is real, I've made a real mistake here, not considering these truths and what scholars like you, Bob, have said about the book of Revelation, and I better go ahead and think about this. Not to use a fear tactic, but to say, why wait any longer? Because you don't know when your personal number is going to be called, much less when all this is going to happen. So why wouldn't you consider these claims and think, you know, with this much at stake, I ought to think about this seriously?
Well, generally, I'd say most people in the world today, in America, in, you know, Western Europe, China, you could pick any major area of civilization, I would say that most people don't even know what we're talking about exists. They don't know that there is this prophetic, you know, piece of the Bible that predicts the future, and they don't probably know that anything happening in the world today has anything to do with that. I think even in the faith community, because people have found the book of Revelation, you know, too hard to understand or too scary or whatever, I think there's a lot of people in the faith community that don't have the ability, again, to at least make rational decisions. No, so, someone might choose to say, hey, I don't buy any of this, okay? I don't believe any of this. I think, you know, the book, the Bible is some fictional thing that men made up. I don't believe in Jesus. But usually those kinds of conclusions are reached without any kind of actual exploration of the facts. So if you are going to say, well, I don't believe any of this, but you don't know, what does the Bible teach about prophecy in the end times and what's happening in the world today that ties into that, that's really not a very rational way of approaching the faith, even if you're going to come to the conclusion, I don't buy it. So the answer is, yeah, you know, never has it, you know, if you look at the book of Revelation, when these events happen, you know, and when Christ returns, nothing will be more important in all the world than your relationship with God and whether or not your name is written in the book of life. Now, the book of life is talked about in the Old Testament, and the book of life is a part of the book of Revelation, where one day the bottom line of, you know, how we spend our eternity will hinge upon, is your name written in the book of life or not, which is a symbol, again, of us coming into a relationship with God through Christ. And when we make that decision and ask Christ into our life, there's two ways of looking at it. One is some people think everybody's name's in the book of life from eternity past, but if you spend your entire life rejecting Christ, your name will be erased from the book of life. And there's imagery of that in the scripture. Other people think that when you come to faith and give your life to Christ, your name is then written in the book of life. But whichever way it happens, ultimately, you know, the most important thing any person could ever know is my name written in the book of life? Am I going to live forever, with Christ, or am I going to spend eternity separated from him? Which I think is the essence of what the Bible calls hell. I think it's simply separation from God, that you are going to exist forever, and you're either going to exist, that immaterial part of you is going to exist either in relationship with God, in which case you're going to get a new body, is what we're told. And again, some people think, well, that sounds like fairy tales. But, you know, the Bible's pretty clear that somehow that you will have a different kind of actual body that will equip you to live eternally, or you're going to spend, you know, eternity separated from God in what Christ sort of, again, you know, referred to as the outer darkness, where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. So it's pretty important stuff.
So hedge your bet would be my advice, and at least expose yourself to this truth. And as Bob said, if you learn it, hear it, and still don't respond to it, at least you've given God a chance to work in your life and given yourself a chance to decide yes or no, and thought it through. So in closing, what should we encourage people to do besides get the Highline on Sunday mornings?
Well, you know, I would also say read the book, because most people have never even read it. And again, you'll read it and maybe you'll think, this is so confusing, I don't understand it. But you'll kind of get the general sense of it, even if you don't understand all of the details. The message of the book is relatively easy. I always tell people the bottom line message of Revelation is this: God wins. Now, you know, I think that's pretty simple, but the details of the book are complicated. But I'd say, you know, read the book. Secondly, you know, obviously, you could go to Highline or some other church that teaches the Bible where this material can be explained to you. There's great books out there. I'm actually rewriting and updating How to Survive the End of the World, and hopefully, you know, within 5 or 6 months, that'll be available on ebooks, is the way I'm going to take it this time. But and it'll simply just be called Revelation, an End Times Odyssey.
Still That's dedicated to me, I hope.
It's still dedicated to you.
Thank
which
you.
The first book was dedicated to.
I know. That's why I'm asking. Yeah. I don't want you to change any part of it. So that'll be out when?
I hope I'll have it up and online and ready in, you know, 5 or 6 months.
Complicated stuff, but don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. Just, as Bob said, read it and then come hear Bob talk about it if you got the time or the interest, which I say you should have.
Well, we'd be glad to, welcome anybody that wants to come. We're just getting started. I'm only literally a couple of verses into the book. So if you jumped in now, you'd get most of the deal.
Okay, so this is You Get the Blessing. You've heard from Bob Belts here, our in-house pastor, guru, author, educator. Come listen, Highline Community Church, 1015, just off the corner of Colorado Boulevard in Hamden. Learn more about what we're talking about. Thanks for letting us know that you listen to You Get the Blessing and understand what we're trying to accomplish here. Have a great week, and thank you, Bob.
You bet, Bo.